It's interesting what we recommend on this show sometimes. Not always movies, not always movies. Sometimes we give you stuff for your life. I have movies, though.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Now, look here, Frank. It's Frank, right?
Yeah.
Frank?
Ah! What the hell are you? You ain't got on me! Let go of me! Damn it!
What the hell is wrong with you, man? Don't you never grab me when I got a gun in my hand.
Shit. You got blood on my coat, Easy? It's a damn expensive coat.
Hello, everybody. Hey. It is Recotopia episode 53. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott.
Today's big recommend is going to be Devil in a Blue Dress. And once again, I would like to welcome chat here, people who are on Twitch and YouTube watching us live on a Tuesday. Thank you so much for coming out and watching us. How you doing today, Jeremy?
I'm doing just well, just very swell and well.
Well, and you? Yes. Yeah, I'm doing well as well. Yeah, swell is right. Yeah, a lot of wells and swells in there. Yeah, we are doing well. Do you have any small recommends?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
I do, but none of them are movies. None of my smalls are movies today. I bought let me step back. 2 years ago, I read about a new kind of shoe that Nike was going to make, and I was quite intrigued with it because I have sneakers that I wear when I leave the house, and then I have these like slip-on glorified slippers that have a sole when I'm in the house, but they don't offer a lot of support. These shoes promised to bridge the gap between those two and be both in one. It was called the Nike Go Fly Ease. And they weren't on sale for the longest time. I couldn't find them. Hey, he found a picture. And then that's actually the ones I bought.
Oh, nice.
So basically the gist is this. You are able to, let me back up. You step your foot in here. And as your foot heel pushes down, the shoe closes up into a complete shoe. And then when you're ready to get out, you use your other foot to step on this back thing.
Oh.
And it just sits there on the floor like that, waiting for me to step into it. Now, I've been wearing them. I have two pair. I've been wearing them for almost 3 or 4 months now. And I've waited to make a recommendation. I thought they were cool immediately. But I was not sure how much support they were going to give me, how they would hold up if it was like raining. And if it's raining, I try to take these off because they are kind of meshy, and you can get a little bit of water in there if you're not careful. But in general, if it has rained, no big deal. They got traction, gives me arch support, gives me ankle support, but I can slip them on and off as though they were a slipper.
Nice.
And I really like them, and I hope this action of whatever this material is that they've made, I hope this action of doing this over time doesn't eventually break the shoe in half. But over 3 or 4 months, it has not happened yet. And yes, I am living in the year 3023.
Yeah.
Jagged said on the chat. You can find them anywhere. They're not cheap. Anywhere from $70 to $140, depending on who's selling them.
Of course, they're Nikes.
Has them in stock. I get the sense they didn't make a whole bunch of them to begin with. And that's why I couldn't find them for the first couple of years. But found them a few months ago. No regrets.
All right. Well, I am in the market for a shoe, so I may take a look at these and see.
There you go.
It's interesting what we recommend on this show sometimes. Not always movies, not always movies. Sometimes we give you stuff for your life. I have movies, though. I'm trying to catch up on all the Oscar nominated movies and everything. So one of the ones that I saw is on Apple TV. It's called Causeway. This one stars Jennifer Lawrence as a veteran of Afghanistan who at the very beginning of the movie is going through a lot of physical therapy and things like that. And we know that there was a huge war zone that she got into while driving a truck, and it caused multiple injuries, including potentially PTSD and things like that. And she's trying to reacclimate herself into everyday life. And she has a pretty quick PT. I don't know how long the movie is saying it lasted, but it seems like pretty quick. Like, she's not all the way there. And even when she's driving, there's definitely some psychological aspects still lingering there because that's what happened. What happened to her was while she was driving a big truck.
Okay.
So she still has these issues that are still lingering, but she gets, she goes back to her hometown to live with her mom, and she's trying to get back on her feet, like try to get a job and try to sort of just get back into society. But very first day, she's like, her mom like lets her borrow a truck to drive around. And of course, like immediately she gets into an issue where there's like a PTSD sort of thing happens to her, and she nearly wrecks the truck, and it causes a lot of problems, and she has to go fix it. And she goes to fix it at this auto shop where Brian Tyree Henry plays the main shop owner guy. He is the one who's nominated for an Oscar in this movie. A guy who's done a lot of great work in the last 5 years. It's like amazing how much
seriously
guy has been in. Brian Tyree Henry is the Oscar nominated actor in this, and he's phenomenal. And I mean, just for performances, I don't know if this movie is great, but Jennifer Lawrence it seems like she's so relaxed. Like, she's come back to, I don't know, maybe she's gotten some sort of zen in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And even though she's playing a character that's got a lot of tough stuff going on with her, she seems very relaxed in this role. Brian Tyree Henry is great as well. They bond over a common thing. He was in a horrendous wreck with his sister and her son, his nephew. And he lost a leg because of this. And so they both have this shared trauma going on, and they just go around hanging out, and she reveals that she prefers women to him, and he's fine with that. But there's this sort of this like almost romantic kind of thing going on with their friendship, and it's hard to really know what's going, like where it's leading, where it's going. I will leave it right there. But Causeway is actually pretty good. I would recommend it on the performances alone. So
excellent. I was curious about this. Is this, do you already say this? Is this an Apple TV movie?
Yeah, it's Apple TV.
All right. I have that. I will now, it was on the radar. Now it goes on the list. carry a lot of weight with me. I don't think you didn't realize. The second small recommend is also not a movie. I've been exploring more and more of Instagram. And I'm a much more passive consumer type of Instagram user, where I mostly just scroll and watch videos of cute cats, nature, crazy Russians with bears and shit like that. I don't post, maybe every 2 or 3 days I'll post a picture of one of my cats. That's essentially all I've done from the content creating perspective. But I found an account that makes me laugh every single day. So if you're on Instagram or want to check it out, I don't know the status of whether they'll let you view if you're not a user anymore, but it's called I'm Seth Drums. There's no apostrophe. You found a picture of him. I love it. So somebody, I have not researched, somebody in this guy's life, this guy's a really good drummer, somebody puts together these mashups. The mashups are usually incredible in their own right. And then he has to drum along to them. And sometimes there's some weird tempos to figure out, but usually the whole point is just watching him react to the mashup that he's been given. So just a few that I've seen. Goofy, as in, you know, Mickey Mouse, Goofy, sings Bring Me to Life by Evanescence. So he's supposed to listen to this and try and keep a straight face and drum. And he almost always breaks, which almost always makes you laugh. So the one that I like the most, I just clicked the link to open. I want to get it right. It's Africa, but it's All Star, but it's Wonderwall. And so it starts out with like, dun, 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 and he's drumming. And it's like, hey, now you're an All Star, because it's in the same tempo. And he goes, oh, God, could it get any worse? And then it turns into Wonderwall, and he legitimately gets amazed that this mashes up so well. He stops drumming and just his eyes get wide and he's like, what? I laugh every single time. This guy posts very regularly. So there you go. It's I'm Seth Drums, all run together, and it's a really good time.
I need to check this out for sure. That would be fun. Yeah,
it's very fun.
Yeah. Okay, my next small recommend is a movie that I know you have seen. I don't know if you recommended it on here, and I don't know if you were even in the position to recommend it, but I did quite enjoy Triangle of Sadness. And it's funny because before I even saw this movie, I remember there being a conversation between you and some others and like talking about how the ending was stupid in this movie and all that. So I was interested to see where this ending was going. I don't know if I have the same opinion of that ending as you do, but I can see where you would get that. This movie, it goes into what is like a huge theme of this past year, where you have rich people acting badly or acting in a way that's less than caring about other people and whatever. So you have like Glass Onion and White Lotus, and you know, there's all these movies that have come out in the past year. It starts off like you will never know where this movie is going by where it starts, because it starts off with a bunch of male models, and they're all like, you know, they're all shirtless and they're all like hanging out about to do some show or about to try out for something. I can't even remember if they're, I think it's, they're doing a show.
I think it's a photo shoot.
It's a photo shoot. Yeah. And so like the, you know, the photographer is like going around asking them questions and then taking pictures. And there's like that one thing where it was like, now you're wearing this brand or whatever. And everybody's like got the sullen look. Now you're wearing this brand, and everybody beams up and gets excited. So we follow this one male model, and he's dating this other like gorgeous, you know, influencer model of some sort, played by Charles B. Dean. And there's a disconnect between them. It doesn't seem like they really love each other that much. They're in a restaurant. They get in an argument about the fact that she doesn't take the bill, even though she gets way more money than he does and everything. And his argument is that you told me last time that you would get the meal, and now we've arrived here and she's like completely forgotten, or is pretended to forget that she was going to do that, and basically makes him do it. And then like, then she thinks it's about money, and it's not about money. It's more about the fact that she said she'd do this and she doesn't, but she keeps making it about the money. And so they go back and forth on this, talking over each other, basically about, you know, some nonsense. By the end of it, they have an arrangement, an agreement, basically. They're like, yeah, you know what? We're just kind of dating each other for the clout, and we're not really in love with each other, but the guy's like, I'm going to make you fall in love with me. It's going to be a challenge. I bet I will make you fall in love with me by the end of this. Now he takes her on this cruise, and this is the middle part of the movie. The movie is separated into three parts. And this is where they get on this cruise, and they're all these like ridiculously wealthy people. And some of them, if not all of them. I didn't catch every single person's how they earned their millions or whatever, but one of them at least got super rich by just selling like war items, grenades and things like that, and they frame it as keeping the peace, and so we know that this cruise ship is going to have some major problems right off the bat, because when the person in charge of all the employees is going in and is like, we're going to do everything that our customers want, no matter what, no matter how impossible, we're going to make it happen, which basically is a catch 22. You can't possibly have rules on a ship and also allow for other things that your rich clients might want. And we start seeing some real, like, slowly, like, whoa, there's some really horrible kind of things about that could happen because of this. Like, it just starts off small. This one worker comes by a hot tub, and the old lady that's in it was like, come into the hot tub. And she's like, well, I'm not allowed to be in the hot tub. But at the same time, she was told anything that these people want. And she keeps going this back and forth, like, yes, no, yes, no. And then either the same one or another rich client wants everybody to jump into the water, including the people in the kitchen staff. And the head chef is like, well, the food's not going to be very good if we do this, but okay. And so they allows all of his kitchen staff to go off and jump into the water and everything, because this delights the rich people. And then they start talking about, they go to Woody Harrelson's the only like real name actor in this whole movie. He's the captain, and you know, things are really bad because he is drinking constantly in this movie. he's behind a closed door for the most part of this trip, drinking heavily, and the ship gets on rocky seas, and you start seeing a dinner where like tables are moving across the table the floor, and like there, and people are eating food that the chef said was not going to be very good because of the things they had to go do. We know this is going to turn into a terrible disaster on like so many levels. There's even a part in here where one of the people on the boat tells Woody Harrelson that the sails are dirty. And he says, this is a motorized vehicle, we don't have sails. And she goes, no, the sails are definitely dirty. And I've gone around and talked to my friends, and they all agree that the sails are dirty too. And he says something to the effect of like, well, we'll get right on it or whatever. but we see this heading for a tremendous disaster. And at that point, I don't know if I want to tell you anymore, because there's a lot of stuff still left in this movie once you realize this ship is headed for that disaster and everything. And I am, because I love this type of stuff, I'm going to end up watching this movie several times. I know in my life, because there's a lot of like connections and parallels and things like that that I like to, that I haven't fully connected after one viewing. And I'm really excited to like revisit it and study it, because I think it's that kind of a movie. This has been nominated for Best Picture. So this is the reason why I ended up watching this one. Actually, I thought I was way behind on Best Picture nominees, but I have one more to go, and that's All Quiet on the Western Front. So
I haven't seen that either.
So I got to watch that, but I highly recommend Triangle Sadness.
I, first of all, there is a very average reality show on Bravo called Below Deck, and it's about these big yachts and the crew that work them. And every episode, there's a new guest package, and sometimes it's relatively marginally famous people. Usually it's just really rich and obtuse people. And they do make the staff do a lot of shit, like get in the water with us, play with us. And like the last one I watched the other day, they two or three of the deckhands were doing a Playboy strip dance for one of the guests. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I would think, demeaning, although the people on the show seem to enjoy the yacht life. But I enjoyed the ride of Triangle of Sadness. I really did. I don't hate the ending. I just don't understand it. And we make a lot of jokes in Sins videos about puking in movies. If that's a real trigger for you, you need to know
quite a bit.
This movie may not be for you.
Now, but, Dave says I'm burying the lead because the third leg of the triangle of the movie is where the real meat is. That's correct, but I do not want to spoil where this movie is going in its third leg, because then you just then I just tell you the whole movie at that point, and I'd rather not. But yes, the third leg of this movie is where a lot of the real like message of this movie is, I would say. But yeah, and that's why it's kind of fun to dissect that ending. I sometimes wonder, you know, when these filmmakers are making movies, they're like, I want to end this as ambiguously as possible. Let's just say, like, let's cut to a character and then have him do something and like not see the resolution of it and go to credits, you know? So you have to do this thing where it's like, I wonder what he was doing. Well, I have my ideas of what he's doing, but I don't know for a fact.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. So anyway, I highly recommend this movie. And yes, other people have mentioned The Menu was another one of those that was the Eat the Rich theme that was going on this year. So, anyway, that's it for the small recommends.
Small.
And today we're going to go into the big recommend. Actually, we always go. I said today, like we never go to the big recommend, but I mean, now we're going to the big recommend.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
The big recommend is Devil in a Blue Dress, 1995 film directed by Carl Franklin, starring Denzel Washington, Don Cheadle, Jennifer Beals, Tom Sizemore, a handful of other character actors that you may recognize, especially back in this time. This is a complex little... it's a detective story without the detective, basically. And I'm going to try my best to talk about the plot of this movie, and I might have to jump around a little bit, but Denzel Washington plays Easy Rollins, and we're told from the very beginning that people from Texas and maybe Oklahoma are moving to California to get into airline jobs and other little things like that. That's that they're come calling in California, and he has just been fired from an airline job, but because of some what sounds like some not very equal bullshit, like he apparently left early during a double shift or something like that, and that's the reason why they're getting rid of him. And so he is looking for money. He's got a house to pay for, so he still needs money. And he tells you right off the beginning, that's his sort of his motivation through all this. He loves coming back to his house and saying, "This is my house, and this is what I own," and everything. So he's at a bar that owned by this guy named Joppy. And Joppy knows somebody who can help him out with money. And it's, Tom Sizemore playing this guy, DeWitt, what is his last name?
Albright.
DeWitt Albright. Tom Sizemore is looking for, tells him that he's looking for, you know, on behalf of this mayoral candidate, he's looking for his girlfriend. And he'll pay him X amount of dollars to find her. He tells Easy that she frequents these illegal clubs, and that because he's white, he can't go to the club. So it's a mostly black club, if not all. In fact, I think it is all, because there's one guy we see getting kicked out, and he's white right off the bat when Easy does go over to this bar. So he goes over to this bar, and he finds out that one of his buddy's girlfriends named Coretta knows Daphne. This is who Jennifer Beals plays Daphne. Coretta knows her, and but she won't, she doesn't tell Easy anything, like, you know, right off the bat, and kind of wants something from him. We don't know exactly what.
We find out
pretty quickly that she wants the D.
Mm-hmm.
The Denzel. She wants the Denzel.
That's what he meant.
Her boyfriend gets super sloppy drunk, and they take him home, and he's passed out. And while he's passed out, they go have sex in the other room. And I love the line. I said this in the small recommend that I had of this a few months ago or whatever, where she's like, you're hitting my spot. And he goes, I went on hitting her spot till morning. she tells him that Daphne is involved with this gangster named Frank Green. We don't know what Frank Green has to do with anything at this point. But he's finally got some information that he can give to Tom Sizemore. And so he ends up telling Tom Sizemore about Frank Green, and that's all he knows, but he's given more money to go find more information about Daphne. We also have some LAPD detectives that are thrown into this story who surprise, surprise, have news that Coretta has been killed. Coretta was murdered. This is just a morning after he's just had sex with her all night. This is quite the news, right? So they've brought him in on suspicion of murder. They beat him up and all sorts of stuff. And then he says, I'll find out who did this, whatever. He gets out of there. And then we start getting like into all sorts of other characters in here. There's another mayoral candidate who picks him up and says that I'm also looking for Daphne for whatever reason. Don't know what. Easy doesn't tell him much. We see a kid in the back seat of the car who says is his adopted son. And then this is going to be really bad later when we find out what's really going on there. But we know that this other mayoral candidate wants to know where Daphne is. So now we've got a lot of interested parties in this. And so what I'm going to go a little bit all over the place here. So Daphne ends up calling Easy and saying, I want you to meet me at this hotel. They go and talk for a bit. She says, I need to go to this dude, McGee's house. And McGee is the guy we saw getting kicked out early on in the club. He got kicked out. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you what McGee is all about, because that's how the sprawling the story is.
Yeah.
McGee has incriminating photos of the mayoral candidate who just talked to Easy in the car. And the incriminating photos are him with naked children. There was supposed to be a deal where Daphne bought the pictures off of him. And Daphne thinks that these pictures are going to help her out later. We don't know why yet, but she thinks these pictures are going to help her out. Tom Sizemore found out about this dude, and he's the one who ends up killing this McGee guy. And so when Denzel and Jennifer Beal show up to this guy's house, he's dead. We don't know why he's dead, but that's the reason why. Tom Sizemore killed him over these photos. But he doesn't have the photos. So there's a lot of stuff going on here with like just a lot of interested parties going on. Eventually Easy goes to talk to another mayoral candidate. And this is the guy that he thinks Tom Sizemore is working with. And he says, I went to go find your girlfriend, and I couldn't find her, I haven't been able to find her yet. And he says, I didn't hire anybody to go find my girlfriend. She's been gone for 2 weeks, and you know, but I would like you to find her. So Easy gets more money from this guy to find Daphne because it's important for him as well, even though he doesn't seem too like super interested in seeing her again. Doesn't really want to know where she is. So there's a lot of this stuff that keeps happening in this where he finds leads. So at the McGee place, he finds these cigarettes that this one guy smokes that I'll never understand. In movies, there's always that one signifier, like nobody else smokes these cigarettes. It's got to be this one guy. They go to that guy and find out that he didn't kill McGee. He just brought him home. And that, you know, he left the cigarettes behind, but he was also supposed to bring a letter to Coretta, or Coretta was supposed to, it was supposed to go to Daphne. I can't remember what this letter was supposed to do. And I hope I'm not like losing everybody, because this is a complex freaking plot.
It really
like
is.
There's a lot of stuff going on here. There's a point where because of all the things that happened at the McGee house, he finds out that Joppy had to have given his number to Daphne, and he is upset now that he's in this deep shit, and he goes to Joppy and he starts slamming his marble bar a bunch with a wrench or something, and trying to get some information out of him. And I can't remember what does he do after that? I think Joppy. Okay, so this is why I'm jumping around. Joppy leads him to the other mayoral candidate. Todd Carter is the guy. He leads him to that. And then Frank Green ends up showing up at Easy Rollins' house, and he's going to kill this guy. But luckily, there's that dude who goes around chopping down neighbors' trees, who tells him, there's a guy with a gun around the corner or whatever. I still don't know what the purpose of this guy who's cutting the trees down. I don't know what that's all about.
I don't know. It must be a character from the book that just held over to the film or something.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, there's a guy with a gun behind the house. And then, of course, it's just enough so that he can get the upper hand a little bit on this. Luckily, even though the tables turn and Frank Green's about to kill him, about to cut his neck, Easy's friend Mouse shows up, played by Don Cheadle. And Don Cheadle is one of those friends you're glad to have on your side, but also he fucks everything up so much, and he's psychologically imbalanced, I would say, as well. You don't want to really associate with this person, but you're glad that he's on your side by the time it's over. Mouse ends up turning the tables again, and then they're going to ask Frank Green some questions, but Mouse can't resist except shoot Frank Green in the shoulder, and Frank runs out of the house, and they don't know anything about what's going on with Frank Green at that point. But he and Mouse start doing the investigation, so to speak. They end up finally going back to this guy Dupre's house, who was the guy who was dating Coretta, or that was her boyfriend or whatever.
They just call him like your man. They don't ever say, I don't think, if it's like a husband situation.
Either way, they were the ones who were involved. They go to his place, and then they find out that Coretta kept a Bible that had all the pictures and it has the letter in it. And that's what's going on. And then Easy goes to talk to Daphne about all of this. And Daphne reveals that her mom was Creole, but her dad was white, and that Frank Green is her brother, but it's a half brother. So like same mother, but father was black. Mm. And the one mayoral candidate who's got the increment touches children inappropriately has this kind of dirt on his opponent, that he's dating someone who's not completely white. And this is 1948 LA. And that's enough to make somebody leave a race a mayoral race for something like that. So she reveals that. And as soon as she reveals that, Tom Sizemore comes in and beats him, takes her. They're going to make him take the fall for her eventual murder. They take him out. They take her out to some sort of cabin. He goes to find Joppy. Joppy, of course, only knows one place, and that one place happens to be the place that they go to. It's some place in Malibu, some cabin. So it's like he, Mouse, and Joppy all go out to this cabin. Easy's going to go and confront all of them, try to mow all of them down before they can kill Daphne. And Mouse says, "We got to kill Joppy. He's too much of a liability." And he's like, "Don't kill him, man. Just stay here with him and tie him down or whatever." And then there's a big shootout at the house. Mouse shows up, ends up doing most of the damage.
Mm-hmm.
And they save Daphne, and then they come back. They find out that Mouse killed Joppy because that's what you do, and you know, when you're a psychopath. And so then the ultimate rub, they find out, they bring Daphne to Todd Carter, the other mayoral candidate. And he doesn't want to have anything to do with her. He paid her $30,000 to leave his life forever so that he could continue with his political career. But she thought that if she brought him the other guy's incriminating photos, that he could get back in the race, and it wouldn't matter whether or not she was interracial or what. And it turns out it does matter. He can't deal with it. And he tells her to pack and go on her way. She ends up paying Easy and eventually, of course, Mouse some money for what they've done. And that's the sad state of things. It ends on a somewhat happy note. I think they didn't want to end it straight up on this like really sour thing. So he's back at home playing are they playing a game? I can't remember if they're playing a game or if they're just having a conversation with one of his neighbors or somebody like that at the end. And there's another little chase around with the guy who's cutting down trees. but the ending narration is basically like it's a hopeful future for him, that he's going to be in, he's got his own house and he doesn't have to worry about any of this anymore. He's got money in his pocket, so on and so forth. Although there is a dark underlining, I think, still to all of this, because race runs throughout all through this movie. And I don't know enough about this particular area that he's living in. I know at one point they mention Compton, but I'm not sure if he's in the Compton area, but they may be making some sort of like, well, this is a happy ending, but it's also got a dark side to it by the end of it. So anyway, Devil in a Blue Dress, it's got a very complex plot, a lot of characters who are sent to do things. Actually, I didn't even get to the fact that Joppy is the one who killed Coretta. Daphne sent Joppy to intimidate Coretta, and he ends up killing her. That's sort of like glossed over in this whole, this whole affair. So there's a lot of characters who are sent to do things, and they are part of a different party, or they didn't do as much as we think they did, or, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Anyway, I was wondering what you thought of this
movie. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I realized when it started that I have seen the beginning of this movie, but I don't know if I ever saw the whole movie. But that whole "your man's in the other room, you're hitting my spot" scene, I was like, I've seen this before. I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was classic detective noir kind of storytelling. Usually that kind of storytelling tends to be a complex, deep-rooted mystery. I'm surprised how compact the film is time-wise, given all it actually accomplishes.
And by the way, not to interrupt your flow, I have a feeling that this was cut down quite a bit, just because that there is so much going on. And I feel like there's maybe some scenes that would give you added context about things that they ended up just chopping to make this shorter. Anyway.
Yeah. The thing that stood out to me the most, and maybe this is not appropriate. Well, it's not inappropriate. The set design and the costumes, like there's so much period detail to soak in this movie. It does not mm-hmm. feel like they just redressed some modern day Los Angeles streets. It feels like they somehow went back to a different era. And I don't feel like movies put that much time and effort and money into those kind of details as much as this film did. The whole time I just kept my eyes kept popping out at all the things. It was really immersive. It felt like I was really back in that time period. There's a moment when he goes to, I'm just going to go through my notes at random. There's a moment when he goes to the black only illegal club where he turns to somebody that works there and says, "Where are all the white women at?" And I immediately went to Blazing Saddles in my head, even though it can't be a reference to Blazing Saddles because set before that movie came out. But I just thought it was a very interesting. Two movies have that phrase with completely different like outcomes. When Easy goes and talks to Dupree and apologizes, he says, "I'm sorry." And Dupree thinks he's talking about Coretta being dead.
Yeah.
And he's really saying, I slept with her. I feel like he's apologizing for more than just that. But Dupree doesn't know that he's apologizing for that. I thought that was very interesting. I wondered if it was ironic or poetic that Mouse's violence first approach is ultimately what helps save the day at the end. If he stays in the car, as Easy told him, then I think Easy dies. I mean, it almost requires Mouse showing up and shooting a lot of people. And I loved seeing the Griffith Observatory. Whenever I cite movies that show that place, I never thought this one would be one of them. I had to Google to find out when it was built. It was built in like the 20s. And then I do want to, I just have a question, and I don't want to be culturally insensitive, but Dupree gives them pigtails to eat. Do you take a tail off of living pig and it grows back? Or do you have to, does the pig's tail that you eat come from a slaughtered pig? I'm wondering how many pigs had to die?
I'm assuming a slaughtered pig, because there's even talk about pig feet in this as well.
It just seems like a lot of pigs would have to die to have like a big soup vat full of pig's tails.
Could be, but I don't know. Tom Sizemore makes that mention of like how Daphne has a predilection. I like that word because he's trying to be sensitive, but predilection towards black people. And Denzel Washington, there's a cut to him. I love this cut to him. He's like, predilection. And he's not saying it in a critical way. He's saying predilection. Like, he's thinking of it. You know what's going through his head. Like, this guy is fucking racist. And we see how racist Tom Sizemore's character is by the end of this movie. He says something like she has a thing for pig's feet and like jazz music or something like that. And that's like supposed to put her in this pigeonhole of some sort, but I'm assuming that's what the case is, but maybe people in the chat know. I would assume slaughtered pig, because I don't know anything about pig's tails at all.
It looks like that somebody, first of all, I'm glad that now Slab has do pig's tails grow back in his search history, thanks to this show. But it looks like they come from slaughtered pigs, and I just don't realize how many pigs are slaughtered on a daily basis.
Quite a bit.
But yeah, no, I loved this movie. I will go back to it again. It's earned a place of esteem. And I love a good detective story, man.
Yeah, pretty unfairly dumped into a September 1995. And, you know, I mean, I think this movie is one that could have used a little bit more love in the editing. And I don't know if I even can blame Carl Franklin for some of that. I mean, and I love this movie. Don't get me wrong. I just think that this movie deserves to be 2 hours plus and add some context to some things that, because once this movie starts going into its, like, once he takes her to McGee's place and they find him dead, it's like, it shoots off like a rocket. How many things happen in this? Each scene seems like it takes like 3 minutes and you get like a snippet of information and it's like, all right, off to that person. And then that person's like, no, I didn't do nothing. And then they beat him up a little bit and then he's gone. So, but yeah, at an hour and 40 something minutes, it seems like it's like, oh, this may be a little bit too quick. There's like a lot of stuff they could have gone with. But anyway, I hope everybody else in the chat enjoyed this movie as well, who ended up seeing it. I am looking forward to what your double feature is for this one.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Yeah, I bet you are. I mean, if I wasn't so averse to the obvious, I would choose Chinatown. But I can't let myself choose something quite that obvious. I sat for days on The Nice Guys because I really wanted that amateur learning on the job, private investigator kind of feel. There are parallels there. There's a period LA setting. There's corruption, government levels, and looking for a missing girl. But I think tonally, that double feature would be like Whiplash. Like it would, you have such a serious drama and then such a silly comedy. I couldn't do that. So I'm going with LA Confidential.
Yeah.
which is for us, you and I, probably a super obvious double feature, but for the masses, not so much. I think Chinatown is much more well-known than L.A. Confidential. We have a similar, almost the same era of an L.A. setting. You've got racist elements throughout. There's a shootout at the end in the dark at a cabin. You've got government corruption in the police and elected officials. And I just feel like it would be the difference here is you've got actual police investigating things as opposed to like a PI. But I didn't ultimately I felt more beholden to the tone match than I did it being like an amateur private investigator. I will tell you that Patrick suggested Big Lebowski as a nice double feature.
Yep.
And I will confess, I've seen that movie like 1.5 times. I don't have the knowledge to match it up. But a lot of people seem to agree.
Decent parallels, but talk about Whiplash in tone. You know, Big Lebowski would be that too. It's interesting to discuss the histories of both Devil in the Blue Dress and LA Confidential, because the movie came out before LA Confidential, but there are moments in Devil in a Blue Dress that seem like in later they kind of cribbed in LA Confidential. Like when he sees McGee's dead body, he has this flashback to seeing him getting kicked out in the bar, and LA Confidential did that quite a bit. And a lot of the story elements are the same, but like both the novels, the Walter Mosley novel this is based on came out in 1990, and the James Ellroy LA Confidential novel came out in 1990. So there's nobody like exactly stealing from each other here. It's just that, I mean, they just happen to be similar stories set in the same time. They both got movies in the mid to late 90s. And as exactly what I was thinking, watching this was LA Confidential. It seemed like a very natural fit. So
well, good. I'm glad that you thought the same thing. That makes me feel good.
All right. So, what is next week's homework, Jeremy?
Next week's homework, we go back to 1986 and Rob Reiner's Stand By Me. Ooh. This is, a drama, of somebody recounting an adventure that four friends had in their youth as they went to try and find the body of a missing boy from their town. This is based on a Stephen King novella. It is on Showtime. Yes, it's on Showtime and Paramount Plus right now. And if you happen to have a premium subscription at Hulu or Amazon, that basically means it includes Showtime. You can see it there as well. I have not seen this movie start to finish in maybe 20 years. Wow. And I'm very excited to go back to it. I remember it being outstanding. So,
You got a lot of people who I would say became stars. And then, like, of all of this, so you have Jerry O'Connell and you have Corey Feldman and obviously River Phoenix and Will Wheaton are the four kids in this. And all of them had at some point some super bright future. Corey Feldman sort of grew out of his teen idol phase after a while, and we didn't see Corey Feldman that much after the 80s that much. River Phoenix, of course, tragically died. Will Wheaton, though, went on to do, you know, Star Trek TNG and still has a cult following from that. Mm-hmm. And Jerry O'Connell, he's just been around forever. He's kind of like been the one mainstay out of all of that, out of that group. So I'm looking forward to seeing this again. I probably saw this 5, 6, 7 years ago. That was the last time I watched it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this. This will be fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
All right, let's do a couple questions before we bow out of here.
All right.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
What are the best twin movies, aka movies with the same or similar enough premise that were released relatively close to each other?
Yeah, this is hard sometimes because usually the twin movies, either they're both bad or one is bad. And so like, how do you find the perfect twin movie? But I think in 2006, The Prestige and The Illusionist came out the same year. Mm. And you can't go wrong with those. Those aren't really twins, I would say. I don't know if they're, but they're both, I don't know. I guess they're enough twin. They're both about magicians. They're both about, how magicians do their tricks and the danger or whatever, or the trouble they can get in, doing this magic. But yeah, those two came out in 2006. I think those are probably good twin.
I like that answer. I remember I didn't see what's the fucking second one you just said? Not The Prestige.
The Prestige and then The Illusionist?
The Illusionist. I didn't see The Illusionist for several years. And when I watched it, I expected it to be like bad. But it was quite entertaining and a little more somehow supernaturally than The Prestige. I'm going to go with, and I know that one of these doesn't have good reviews, but I liked it. I'm going to go with the two Truman Capote films, Capote and Infamous. Capote starred Philip Seymour Hoffman. Infamous starred Toby Jones. Do I have that right? And they both cover the exact same period of Truman Capote's life when he is having conversations and writing letters with one of the prisoners that he would base In Cold Blood on. And I think both of them give really good performances as Capote. And it's unfortunate for Toby Jones's sake that, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman came first and is arguably a much better actor overall.
I remember when Capote came out, it had all that, you know, huge fanfare because of Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance and all that. And then I remember sitting in a theater not too long after Capote came out and saw this Infamous trailer. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? How did this happen? Over in the chat, we have some people who are some big Illusionist fans. They might like they might like it better than The Prestige, even.
All right.
Ed TV and Truman Show. That's DPW says
Ed TV and Truman Show.
That's a good one. I have never been a huge fan of Ed TV, but I thought Ed TV is good. So I mean, and then let's see, what else do we have here? Dunkirk and Darkest Hour, of course. Yeah.
Excellent.
Was there talk, or did we just kind of talk, or was there a general internet conversation about making that one full movie? Like somebody just edited it together.
No, I think we talked about it on the Syncast. I think we mused about, and I think somebody has done it on YouTube, cutting the two movies together. They do cover the same time period. And I don't know if it would work. I like both of those movies a lot, though. It's definitely a good answer.
Slab says Dread and The Raid. Those are very twin movies. Josh says Liberty Stand Still and Phone Booth. Now, I've never seen Liberty Stand Still, but he says you can throw a lock in there. So I'm assuming that's someone on a phone or in a phone booth in Liberty Stand Still.
Liberty Stand Still sounds like the rom-com about the president's daughter,
like Mandy Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does.
What else do we got? But Ants and Bug's Life, I think I saw.
Yep.
All right. Best or favorite movie over 3 hours long? Go. Also, picking the Lord of the Ring extended cut is cheating. Thank you for setting rules, question maker.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go with Lawrence of Arabia on this one. When I first watched Lawrence of Arabia, I was like, oh, that's good. You know, like, you know, someone who's not like super well versed in movies, the first time he watched Lawrence of Arabia, I was like, oh, that's pretty good. And then later on, watching it a couple more times, you're like, wow, what a fucking movie this is.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What a fucking movie this is. And so, yeah, I'm going to go with Lawrence of Arabia on this.
That's obviously a great answer. I'm going to go with Dances with Wolves. There are plenty of three-hour plus movies that I love, but Dances with Wolves has some nostalgic hold on me, man.
I need to revisit Dances with Wolves, not because I'm down on it or anything. It's just, I haven't seen it in forever and I've got it. So I need to watch this movie again. I really do. So, looking over in the chat, Slab says The Right Stuff, which is one. I do love The Right Stuff. Quite.
Oh yeah.
I love that movie. Castro says Babylon. Now talk about a movie I'm going to have to see again because I wasn't a big fan of Babylon. James says Drive My Car melted me. Yes. Drive My Car is a great one. Great, great movie. And then Jagged says, I think my favorite is Avengers Endgame, but I need to see a list. I don't even know. Did that movie hit 3 hours? I don't even remember that. I don't even remember that. And then,
well, it certainly didn't waste any time with Tony inventing time travel. That's not where the bloat is.
That's true. That's true. Patrick says Schindler's List. Yeah, yes. Schindler's List is an excellent one. Slab says The Green Mile. Patrick also says The Godfather 2 is over 3 hours. Some really good ones there. I really particularly like that Right Stuff answer.
Yeah,
that's a movie. That's one of those movies. There's so many that you don't have to really follow the plot of all the way through. You can pick that up in any part of the movie.
And it's
great. So like, I really did.
I remember watching that movie when I was young. I think that came out when we were relatively young. Do you know the year that came out?
83.
So I was 8 years old. But at that point, or shortly thereafter, Chuck Yeager used to do like spark plug commercials. And I used to be amazed because I had seen The Right Stuff and I knew who Chuck Yeager was in context of that and spaceflight in general. And I was like, that is like Jesus on there. If he likes those spark plugs, they must be awesome. Like, I was just amazed.
I remember those. Those were very ubiquitous commercials back in the day.
Chuck Yeager, everywhere. The AC Delco, the Simpsons even spoofed them. All right. I think that's probably going to do it.
That's going to do it for this week. Next week is Stand By Me. Looking forward to revisiting that one for sure. That's Rob Reiner. Like, just, I mean, he can't do any wrong in this period of time. So looking forward to that. Thank you once again, chat, for coming out on Twitch and YouTube, giving us your comments. You make us better, and I'm very happy that you're here to give us your opinions and things. So hopefully we'll see you next week. So see you next time. See ya.
Bye.
Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
On the podcast all day long, roly 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 poly ploly.
I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this movie trivia thing before, but I asked everybody watching the question. So there's three actors in 1995 who have won 5 Oscars between them, and they were in 3 movies. 2 of the 3 actors were in each movie. So performer 1 acted with performer 2, performer 2 acted with performer 3, and performer 1 acted with performer 3 in 3 movies in 1995. and asked them if they could come up with it. And Jets Mets had apparently heard me say the names of these people before on a podcast, but could not come up with the movies that they were in. And everybody was kind of like trying to guess it and trying to figure it out. I thought people would remember me saying this and it'd just be easy, or like they just figure it out through some just internet osmosis of some sort. But it had there wasn't really anybody who had the answers by the end of it. And
fascinating.
Ended up telling them, but
I'm bad at ears, but I figure it has to be Denzel and Gene Hackman from Crimson Tide.
That's two of them.
And then I'm not entirely sure I can pick the other movies or the other person. Russell Crowe, Quick and the Dead, and Virtuosity.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. That's it.
I felt good. That's a good way to start the podcast. I mean, yeah. Outtakes.
Yeah, so I was like, all right, well, one of these performers won two Oscars before 1995. One of these performers won one before and one after. And the other one won their Oscar one after 1995. So,
oh, man.
So just kept on adding little things like that. And then by the end of it, I was like, all right, here's the answer. You know. And
what did Russell Crowe win for? Was it Gladiator?
It was Gladiator. Believe it or not, it was Gladiator. Of all the the most iconic performances he has are like A Beautiful Mind and he was nominated for The Insider, but I thought he was great in The Insider too. But he didn't even get nominated for L.A. Confidential, but. If you ask the common person, like what did he win for? I don't know. A lot of people would probably pick Gladiator, just the regular common person off the street. But A Beautiful Mind is what I come up with when I think of Oscar winning performance.
Yeah. So, I mean, even that Ron Howard boxing movie, he's better than he is in Gladiator. Mm-hmm. Gladiator is just what, you know, it's what it is. It's Gladiator.
Yeah.
I have a new mystery for us to solve.
Ooh.
We solved the mystery. Well, Aaron solved. You guessed correctly, and then Aaron solved the mystery of the calories in my lemon-lime beverage. And I have to give credit to the Nashville subreddit for this particular mystery, because I did not notice this myself. But ever since it has been told to me, I have been obsessed with it. Every single one of the new blue Tennessee license plates, the main official ones, not any of these, you know, animal nature plates or specific sports plate. The blue new Tennessee plate, every single one of them has a B.
Really?
I have not found one that doesn't in the last 4 days. Hmm. I've seen plates from several Middle Tennessee counties. Of course, I see mostly my own county's plates, but I'm now obsessed with it. I've got my wife looking out, and she's obsessed with it, and I have not seen one that doesn't have a B in it.
That's interesting. I'm wondering, I can't remember what mine is right off the bat.
So I'm trying to figure out, is this like a regional code thing, maybe?
It could
be. Middle Tennessee has B's in every plate, but East Tennessee has R's in every plate. How do they settle on B? I actually joked. I said, well, our governor's name is Bill, so maybe he like secretly made sure there was a B for Bill on every single plate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that does feel like the kind of thing a governor might do. My wife was originally obsessed with trying to spot which plates had In God We Trust over the Tennessee logo in the center, because you had a choice when you get your... and then I pointed out that the ones with numbers, the ones that start with numbers have In God We Trust in the center. The ones that start with letters don't. Hmm. And she was like, oh, it's going to be so much easier to spot now. I almost don't want to know the answer. I almost like this better as like an X-Files kind of thing, like there's some kind of conspiracy.
Let's see if I can find anything.
But I do think it's a little weird and worth asking questions about. Because I don't think they stamp these like the old way with the hard metal machines that like in when Krusty's in jail. I don't think they do that anymore. There's a cat up to no good right there.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to mess with my Batman graphic novels. I shouldn't put them where... Hey.
I think I've probably given my cats complexes. I don't know. It you know, some people spray water bottles at their cat when they're doing stuff, and I'm not a big water bottle guy. But like, every time my cats do something, I like smack my hands real hard, you know, and that gets them at attention. Yeah. And you know, and because especially when my brother like sold me his like his L-shaped couch or whatever, and they started wanting to like, you know, do their claws on it and everything. And yeah. I was like, every time they got anywhere near that, I was like, you know, and they still occasionally forget and they get over there and do it. But every time I'm right there ready to, but cause I have so many things they can scratch around the couches. Stop scratching the couch.
Yeah, I've given you tools for this. You don't need to use my tools for that.